You're listening to the Leaping Cholla podcast, recorded in the Wrong Mountain Yurt in the Sonoran Desert.
I am falling away from this world. I am falling away from this world.
All right, we're going. Hello, good evening. We are on section 127 of Contributions to Philosophy of the Event by Martin Heidegger, and it's titled The Fissure. It is page 192, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah.
And we're going to go ahead and get going.
Awesome. 127, The Fissure, is the self-contained unfolding of the intimacy of being itself, to the extent that we experience being as refusal and as the encompassing refusal. If one wanted to attempt the impossible and grasp the essence of being with the help of the modalities of metaphysics, then one might say refusal, the essential occurrence of being, is the highest actuality of the highest possibility as possibility, and is thereby the first necessity, prescinding, of course, from the question of the derivation of modalities out of Greek for being, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
This clarification of being tears it from its truth, the clearing of Dasein, and degrades it to a pure and simple, objectively present thing in itself. That is the worst devastation which can befall a being. And here it is transferred to being itself. Instead, we must try to think the fissure on the basis of the fundamental essence of being, in virtue of which being is the realm of decision for the battle among the gods. This battle is waged over their advent and absconding. It is the battle in which the gods first divinize and bring their god into a decision. Being is the trembling of this divinization, trembling as the expanding of the temporal spatial playing field in which the trembling itself, as refusal, appropriates to itself its clearing, the there. The intimacy of this trembling requires the most abyssal fissure, and in the latter, the inexhaustibility of being might be inventively thought by way of surmises. Excuse me, I'm a little out of breath over here. It's a pregnancy thing.
Yes.
Yeah. One of my students asked me if I was congested. I was like, I think I'm always congested. And I was like, actually, I think it's not being able to fully breathe.
Yeah. How pregnant are you?
What is today date? Today is, I am due in 2 months.
I was going to say, you feel like you're pushing 7 months.
No, I think that's like 8.
Well, no, what? You're doing 2 months. That 9 minus 2 is 7.
So I thought it was actually 10 months of pregnancy.
No, gosh. Good Lord. No, it's 40 weeks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, which I guess.
But the thing is, there's kind of this bonus 2 weeks that they give you at the beginning where you're not actually pregnant, but they count it.
Yeah. I bet you 40 weeks is like, so it's 280 days, right? I bet you that's like 9.5 months.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think I did the math once, but it's a little more dramatic to just say 10 months. So I guess if you get rid of, okay, that maybe that's fake. So I guess if you get rid of those 2 weeks that you're actually not pregnant, it really is 9 months of pregnancy.
Right.
Okay, so I'm 7. You're right. I'm 7 months pregnant.
Okay.
You were right. Great. It's more dramatic.
Yeah, but that's...
It's not a lie.
It's not true, and I don't want to feel that dramatic about it. It's not... Yes, yes. It's still a couple months away.
That's true. That's true.
The fissure is the self-contained unfolding of the intimacy of being itself. So What is the fissure? The fissure. What is this thing? The fissure. Why is this? Why is this paragraph called the fissure? Why are we talking about a fissure? The fissure, it is the self-contained unfolding of the intimacy of Bang itself, to the extent that we experience Bang as refusal and as the encompassing refusal. So, we experience Bang as refusal. Refusal is essentially a term that refers to our decision to forgo and withdraw from everything we've identified in this podcast as the liberal mindset, in a sense. Of course, it's bigger than that, but it is the conceptual underpinnings of the liberal mindset that we've identified, such as worldview, representation, objectivity, constant presence, identity, self-deception, being abandoned by being, these kind of things. So we experience Bang by refusing those things. And this fissure is the self-contained unfolding of the intimacy of Bang. So as we refuse, we are appropriated by and we become intimate with Bang. And there is a fissure there. There is an unfolding of that intimacy. Now, the fissure you can kind of think of, I'd say, as the gap between yourself and what you are refusing. If you don't enact the refusal, then there's no gap. You become subsumed in whatever you might otherwise refuse. So, for instance, you become subsumed in or subsumed by liberal mindset, and the liberal mindset becomes your mind, and you become homogenous with the liberal homogenous with the liberal mentality. So the fissure is what emerges via the refusal, and the fissure is intimacy with Bang. So via the refusal, we become intimate with Bang. Now, should we want to attempt the impossible, and I think the reason he suggests that is that I think the liberal mindset is very drawn to attempting what he's about to describe, mm-hmm. and grasp the essence of Bang with the help of the modalities of metaphysics, we'll get into what those are, then one could say, refusal, aka the essential occurrence of Bang, is the highest actuality of the highest possibility as possibility, and is thereby the first necessity. And prescinding, of course, from the question of the derivation of modalities out of Ujja. So modalities are necessity, possibility, and contingency. Those are the modalities of metaphysics. We've talked about them before. Mm-hmm. So we could try to grasp the essence of Bang via these modalities of metaphysics. But this clarification of Bang, well, let's go back a little bit. So in what sense is Bang necessary? AKA actual. In what sense is Bang possible? And in what sense is Bang contingent upon other things? These three modalities are ways of thinking about being, but that's about thinking about being. Bang, he says, cannot be thought of but that way. And this clarification tears Bang from its truth, the clearing of Dasein, and degrades it to a pure and simple, objectively present thing in itself, which destroys Bang. Bang cannot be, in a sense, caged. That is the worst devastation which can befall a being. to be degraded to a pure and simple, objectively present thing in itself. And here it is transferred to Bang itself. So this thing that we do to beings all the time, right? We tear them from their truth and we degrade them to a pure and simple, objectively present thing in itself. Now we do it to Bang. But let's not do that, he says. Instead, we must try to think the fissure on the basis of the fundamental essence of Bang. So keep the fundamental essence of Bang before you and think of the fissure via that fundamental essence, in virtue of which Bang is the realm of decision for the battle among the gods. So the gods are ultimate being. The gods are the ultimate causes. The gods are the gods, as he uses it, represent or are that in existence which emanate power, cause, force, and provide essentially motility, action to the world. And they are the source of what we consider truth, they're the source of what we consider ethics, they're the source of what we consider existence, etc. And Bang is the realm of decision for the battle among those many forces. So it's the place where the decisions are made regarding all the I guess, shall we say, ultimate beings that cause being. This battle is waged over their advent and absconding, their coming and their going. When are they there? When are they not there? How can we know when they're there? How can we know that they're gone? How can we find them? Where can we find them? What is this ultimate reality that we are trying to access? It is the battle in which the gods first divinize and bring their god into a decision. So the gods have a god. The causative beings have an essence. The causative beings have, in a sense, a cause themselves. They have an ultimate cause. The ultimate causes have an ultimate cause. Bang is the trembling of this divinization. Bang is the trembling of the gods deciding over their god. Mm-hmm. Or shall we say, the causes deciding what their cause is. Trembling as the expanding of the temporal spatial playing field in which the trembling itself, as refusal, appropriates to itself its clearing, the there. So the trembling creates and is appropriated by the clearing, which is the there, where we find what is in time and space, and that's where Bang resides via the divinization of the gods. It is the divinization of the gods. The intimacy of this trembling requires the most abyssal fissure. And in the latter, the inexhaustibility of Bang might be inventively thought by way of surmise. So it's the intimacy of this trembling requires the most abyssal fissure. So there's kind of there's a little bit of a paradox there. We don't normally think of intimacy and fissure as related. Think of them as opposites, don't we? Mm-hmm. If you're intimate, you think of being together. However, that is not the case. We might call that a liberal notion. Mm-hmm. Intimacy requires the most abyssal fissure because only two things that are absolutely different can be intimate with each other. Otherwise, they fuse and are the same, and there is no intimacy. So there is an abyssal fissure between the refusing and the Bang. right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the latter, in the abyssal fissure, the inexhaustibility of Bang might be inventively thought by way of surmises. So by surmising, by guessing, by imagining, by conjecturing, by throwing out ideas, the inexhaustibility of Bang can be inventively thought. So, you know, I would say this is one of those sort of topology sections, right? Where he's describing what almost feels like a playing field or players or elements in a concatenation of action. Where he's setting the parameters, he's laying out the pieces, talking about what is going on at the very fundamental level of knowledge and awareness of Bang and appropriation by Bang. He's saying that there are modalities of metaphysics that are normally used to understand being, but they actually don't apply here. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're destructive here. We need to stick to the clearing of Dasein. We need to stick to the trembling. And he's trying to lay out the framework of what emerges from the refusal. Mm-hmm. So we can gather from this conceptually what it means to withdraw from the liberal mindset. Mm-hmm. And once we decisively withdraw via that refusal, what we want to then kind of sense as our landscape and our topology and the elements that we're going to be working with there. So via that withdrawal, we are going to generate a fissure. So there's going to be a gap. There's going to be a space. There's going to be a, you know, the word we maybe sometimes use for it is an alienation. Mm-hmm. However, that alienation, that gap is going to generate an intimacy with Bang. Bang is literally going to occur as a result of that fissure. And we need to then avoid trying to sort of define what we're seeing and experiencing as being objectively being a pure and simple objectively present thing in itself. So we need to not only create that, engage in that refusal and embrace that fissure and experience that intimacy with Bang, we then need to throw out what would be the normal and deep-seated liberal tendency to use the modalities of metaphysics to try to clarify what we're seeing and identify it as an objectively present thing in itself. And we need to go back and we need to understand that the clearing of Dasein is we're dedicated to the clearing of Dasein. We will not engage in this devastation that befalls beings when we turn them into objectively present beings, right? And we will we will enter this decision realm where the gods are doing battle over who will be their god. So I think metaphorically we enter this decision realm where actual truths are being debated in order to discover higher truths. There is trembling, there is divinization, there is the playing field, and we are going to surmise, we are going to make surmisals, right, in order to inventively think in Bang. A lot of this stuff is very, I would say, not only verboten in the liberal to the liberal mindset, but it's also sort of doesn't come naturally to it, or it's almost like it also almost runs contradictory to the way the liberal mindset is compelled by its own historiology. Mm-hmm. Right? Surmising is something that liberalism, as we watch it develop, grows increasingly allergic to. Inventively thinking, again, defrays and abandons and deflects out of the liberal arcana, and so it is kind of frowned upon, right?
Yeah.
The fissure in itself, yeah. Liberalism has a fetish for
things being smoothed over.
Yes,
like, and everything. A lack of crack, a lack of
that's
fissure.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah, it all making...
Everything being the same.
Causing, yeah, in causational sense.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. We are, you know, they have various words for it. We're all neighbors. There's a community. Mm-hmm. It's the A in scalp. It's the anonymity that community requires. It's the namelessness. Mm-hmm. It's the giving of oneself. It's all, in a sense, the offspring of identity's annihilation of the self. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Decision realms. Liberalism does not like decision realms. In fact, realms of decision for the liberal are now just called fascism. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, democratic outcomes, right, are decision realms, and liberals hate it when it doesn't go their way. So, and of course, avoiding a pure and simple, objectively present thing, and avoiding calling, degrading everything into a pure and simple, objectively present thing in itself is very... avoiding that is something that liberalism has a very hard time doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? And refusal in general is hard for liberals, because really it means refusing the forms of thought that have been handed down to you via the liberal machine. Mm-hmm. And separating from them. You can't separate from them. You can't step away from them, because you need to be absorbed by them. You need to dedicate yourself to them. You need to be in the party, with the party, of the party all the time. Mm-hmm. You need to be an active and fully engaged progressive. It's like absorption in Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, a fertile section. Yeah. What do you want to say?
Yeah, that was really beautifully laid out. I think it's a really nice look at refusal. Like, I think you said it as the gap between the fissure, or I think you said something like the refusal of the sort of our liberal platonic first beginning way of thinking patterns leads to the fissure, and then that fissure is the gap between the self and what you're refusing.
Yeah.
And I've never thought of it that way, and I really like that. I feel like in trying to think about this other beginning in this work, it does feel like there's a gap, I guess.
Yeah.
Like it feels like, and we've talked about like the waiting, the refusing, the trying to hold in stillness while I guess what would normally be a rush of emotions or assumptions or past claims. So like trying to hold those off. Mm. I guess there does feel like a trembling. I mean, I can't say I like it. I don't really like that feeling. It feels a little sort of electric and like you're waiting for something to happen, which I feel like for me can go pretty easily into anxiety, as opposed to like staying with the trembling or staying with the refusing. So this is just a really nice way to think about that, I think.
Yeah, talk more about what how does the trembling emerge? How does it feel? What's your experience of it?
I'm not sure. I don't know if I've ever experienced it, to be honest, but I guess what I feel like in a sort of mind state that is trying to not jump onto, let's say, scrolling the phone or I don't know, I guess one could say in an attempt to be meditative or just say in stillness, I feel like that's part of this fissure. I feel like that's part of it. Yeah. And I feel that, I guess, like I said, that it's a hard thing for me to like stay with and not jump to like the objectively present. It's interesting. He puts that so clearly as the, other pole here.
Yeah.
So my experience is like, I guess for me, I would say I don't feel very, I'm not like super comfortable or at home there. It still is sort of a triggering or like it can be a stressful place. And again, I might be interpreting it differently. this is just one possible interpretation of, I think, where the refusing happens. Because when you are trying to refuse something, it's not always easy. I don't know. There's like, does that make any sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm reminded of, our good friend at the Zen Institute in New York who said that the limit of yoga is pain and the limit of meditation is fear. And I like that you bring up meditation because I think, I'm sure there's a Sanskrit word for it. meditation is a kind of refusal. It's a kind of the generation of a fissure. It's a separation. You know, it's that withholding, that stepping back and watching your thoughts as if they're just sort of a movie passing by.
Yeah.
Which is not a metaphor I've ever really liked because movies are obviously very emotionally engaging, but you know, sort of just like as if it's just, that's the thing. What metaphor would we use to talk about something that just can pass by us and we don't have any inherent attachment to it? It's hard to figure out. But I think that the fissure that is generated in meditation, I'm reminded of one of my early sort of breaks with liberalism came again way back like in the early days of Black Lives Matter, I would say, and I saw I was very enmeshed in the yoga and meditation scene in New York at the time. And I saw person after person after person engaging in yogic or meditative practices in various spaces, and that fissure was gone, and they seemed to be meditating only, well, in a sense, only to further their liberalism. And kind of meditating in a state of panic and duress and anxiety. Meditation was actually just kind of, and yoga just became kind of an expression of their anxiety. And the core meditative action of refusing and entering that fissure and trying to get in touch with the trembling that is the decision realm of the gods was just brushed aside for what had clearly become much more important, which was the war for the liberal hegemony. So I saw these acolytes of peace and truth and meditation degrade into foot soldiers for war. And it showed me that the whole thing was a sham, and it always was a sham. Yeah. And of course it is a sham. We talked about yoga in the last time. You know, one of the great, I mean, as I've said, liberalism's the extinction event that liberalism has wrought on the art world is, you know, can't even be described in its size and horror. But the extinction event, it's visited upon the, whatever we want to call it, the spiritual world, mm-hmm. right, is just as terrible.
Yeah.
People don't really have the ability to be non-liberal yogis, yeah. or to be non-liberal meditators. And in fact, I would even say that, you know, we've struggled a lot with sort of what politics are we positioning via this podcast. And obviously it's non-liberalism, but I would almost say that what we're really trying to talk about is how to engage in that refusal of liberalism in order to achieve art, mm-hmm. decision, meditation, and clear, rational, political thinking. Hmm. Non-sentimental, non-obsessive, non-anxiety-driven, habitually addicted, liberal-maxing political thought.
Yeah.
Anti-liberal-maxing. I can't even remember what my thought was, but you know what I'm saying.
Yes. That's really well said.
Because I think that there's something synonymous in our age now with post-liberalism and just the very basic stance of inceptual meditation.
Yeah.
Gaining a free mind. It's kind of where we left the whole idea of art last time, which is that really what we're looking for is free art. Mm-hmm. So, of course, free art, what free art is very hard to assess. But we do know one thing, it's not liberal art. Mm-hmm. And it's not conservative art either. Mm-hmm. But so we're craving that fissure, that abyss, that gulf, that gap, wherefrom we can experience a trembling. So that's like a sensation, right? It's a mm-hmm. vibration. It's like trembling means you're scared.
Yeah.
So again, the limit of meditation is fear. Fear is what holds you back from meditation. And if you think of liberalism as anxiety, aka pure fear, or even we could even say generalized fear, then the limiting factor to meditation is so omnipresent in the liberal addicted mind that meditation is impossible.
Yeah.
Right? It's like saying, let's grow a garden in salt. Got to get rid of the salt. Nothing lives in salt. Well, no meditation lives in the mind of an anxiety addicted liberal. It's impossible.
Yeah.
So we're seeking a free mind. We're seeking a meditation. We're seeking this refusal to experience an intimacy with bang, which is what we really think of as real experienceable existence, truth, right? Time, space, mm-hmm. For lack of a better word, the reality that exists outside objectively present representation, gangrened by liberal political fixations, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this podcast is a spiritual quest.
Yeah.
It's a quest for freedom. It's a request for liberation.
Yeah.
From liberalism. That was mm-hmm. that was what that was that was that was the profile text on our bio for a long time, mm-hmm. seeking liberation from liberalism, mm-hmm. which I think is exactly right. When, and you know, I don't think that really has anything to do with being conservative. Mm-hmm. I think we like to think that in engaging that refusal and practicing what we deem an anxiety-free, rational, political cognition, we've come to see various policy ideas as pretty self-evident, mm-hmm. right? As obvious. Mm-hmm. But I think they're only obvious to us because we are not poisoned by anxiety. Like we are trying to cultivate this even-mindedness, this free-mindedness mm-hmm. that is able to make decisions free of that liberal addiction, that liberal delusion. And, you know, neither of us asked for any of this. Neither of us, you know, and that's the thing, we're always just shocked at how an issue will come up. You know, again, when we met, we were liberals, both very liberal. And we slowly moved in absolute tandem. And we've always been in absolute tandem. We've never disagreed about a single issue. Mm-hmm. But yet we've never even talked about why we believe what we believe. It's just happened to us. Mm-hmm. And I think we're putting forth the hypothesis, and it's a very arrogant one, but maybe all are, that this refusal, this fissure that we've generated has indeed gotten us in touch with the fundamental inceptual foundations of meditation and of awareness and liberation and rational political thought. Mm-hmm. Like, rational political thought is just political thought that is not driven by liberal anxiety. Mm-hmm. And, you know, liberal anxiety could also just be, you know, liberal prejudice, liberal biased social orchestration. You know, we want the establishment of a free world with as few biases, prejudices, and limitations as is prudent. You know, so, mm-hmm. so, you know, that's just it just happened to us. And I think it, mm-hmm. it feels, I mean, this is where we're going to bring in the gods and the divisation. It feels God given, mm. right? Like you and I,
yeah.
It almost as if rationality or the logos of the gods is just handing us our knowledge. Mm. Because And the reason I'm saying that is if I was just sitting in a room by myself for the last 12 years coming up with the ideas, I might be like, okay, yeah, I'm just kind of like, I don't know, reading stuff and making decisions that benefit me personally. But you and I, in two distinct heads, two distinct lives, two distinct pasts, it's almost as if you're sitting in the left hand and I'm sitting in the right hand, and the God is walking through space, and we're going the exact same place. Mm-hmm. And it's always been like that. Anytime we're like, well, what do you think of that issue? And I'll tell you, and you tell me, and the cogent factor that determines our thinking and our similarities and our inevitable harmony seems to just be rationality. It's like we just talk through the issue. We say, well, this seems like mm-hmm. this, and it just makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that's what so many people now are talking about their experiences with liberals is the whole game that the liberals are playing now seems to kind of just be inexplicable emotive compulsions.
Yeah.
All their policies, all their positions are just inexplicable emotive compulsions. Mm-hmm. Because they're incredibly wrapped up in preserving their worldview. Mm-hmm. You read this all the time. You say, what's going on with like liberals just freaking out? Well, they thought the world was just kind of finally going to become a mirror image of what they needed the world to be in order for their anxiety to go away. That was their fantasy. Mm-hmm. It was never true, and it never would be true. Then Trump came along and said, yeah, that's not happening. Well, you couldn't ask for a more devastating event in the eschatology of liberal obsession with manifesting paradise. So here we sit, right? And we live a very weird life, a very alienated. We live in the fissure, right?
Yeah.
But it's important to remember, we live a very strange, alienated, distant, lonely life. But we are intimate with Bang.
Yeah.
We are in the decision realm where the battle of the gods is taking place. We are face to face, heart to heart, mind to mind with active time-space truth, not pure and simple objectively present things in themselves, not lies, not fabrications, not beings abandoned by being, not just tautologies, not propaganda, not what the liberal order tells us to do and think. We're standing in the middle of the open realm in which the truth of Bang is happening. And we're having that trembling, and that trembling is, it's the interplay between meditation and fear. If you're going to meditate, you're going to be afraid. But the more you meditate, the less you're afraid. If you're all afraid, you're not going to meditate. So it really is a kind of, there's 100% here, right? And you can have 10% meditation and 90% fear. You can have 50% meditation, 50% fear, etc. It's always an admixture of those two things. But if you really enrich and enliven and embrace that intimacy and stay in that fissure and manifest that refusal and say no to the liberal mind machine, then you start to experience the truth that meditation brings about.
That was beautiful. I'm curious to hear more about how liberalism has overtaken meditation, because if you don't mind going in that direction specifically. Because I feel like also when we talked about how it's overtaken yoga as well, I'm not sure. I mean, I guess we did identify some of the features. But like, I feel like in a way, like I've never meditated, even though I've tried, I've never successfully meditated. And when I think back to my attempts to meditate, I think of like basically the idea that like thoughts come up and then you try not to let them upset you, but then that's impossible. So it feels like a failed meditation. I feel like that's my experience with my attempts to meditate.
Yeah. Because every thought upsets you?
Not every thought, but like, I think inevitably in that space, some thoughts are fine, but then I think inevitably, if I'm sitting there trying to maybe let any thoughts come, or like, or knowing that some thoughts do upset me, then they come up because they're the ones that I know will do that.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, is that like a liberal, I mean, I don't know, is that a liberal approach to meditation or not necessarily? I mean, I'm not sure how I came up with that idea of how to meditate.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I think inevitably, yeah, liberalism is probably what's preventing you from feeling like you're meditating or having the awareness of meditating or having a sense that you're engaged in what you think of as meditation. Mm-hmm. I think some of that is from, you know, you need to remember the linkage between the phrase liberalism and the phrase progress. Mm-hmm. Progress is a very dangerous idea. Because it's a train.
Yeah.
It's a rolling train. And if you're trying to sit still, you can't be on a train.
Yeah.
So there's the idea of progress that I think is stands in the way of meditation. There is the idea of what meditation should be. Mm-hmm. So there's the pure and simple objectively present thing in itself. Mm-hmm. Meditation has come to have a host of connotations and definitions that percolate around in our brain, none of which are actually meditation. Like, yeah. Meditation is definitely, if anything, it's trembling in the temporal spatial playing field in the open realm of bang.
Yeah.
Right? But we're not very good at dropping our obsession with establishing objectively present things in themselves and and understanding words by their definitions, not by our experience with what happens when the word drops into us, but yet we happen around the word. Mm-hmm. So how we relate to words and definitions and assumptions of what something is and what something should be is all very pantomimed into us by liberalism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that, as you say, when you said about meditating, you're going to have some assumptions about what it's supposed to be, and it's never going to be those assumptions. But having those assumptions, having those pre-programmed ideas about it, is hard to stop doing. Mm-hmm. But it is a key component of the refusal. In fact, I would say a good definition of the refusal is the refusal to warrant those pre-programmed assumptions. Mm-hmm. It's a rejection of them. And you know, again, that sort of metaphor of meditation as, you know, you're sitting there just watching time and space and events and whatever, all you're watching your thoughts as a movie just passing in front of you. Well, that's not a good metaphor, because movies captivate us and get us wrapped up and we, you know, blah, blah. But so what is it? Is it just leaves falling on a tree? Is it just wind blowing through the air? Is it just bugs crawling on the floor? Is it just the ticking of some odd universal metronome? Is it just little blips passing? What is a neutral, non arousing, non engaging, non upsetting array of things passing before you? What could that possibly be? And in a sense, the liberal cannot answer that question, mm-hmm. because there's no such thing. Mm-hmm. Everything that we could possibly think of as passing before our awareness carries with it that sappy, thick endowment of liberal angst. Mm-hmm. That is largely emerges from the fact that liberalism's primary focus is determining for every single thing where it falls in the array of progressive or not progressive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? So you can't just sit down and meditate if you're a liberal. You're not going to do it. It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You have to get rid of the liberal first. Then you can meditate. Now, I'm going to say this, and I don't know if this has any relevance, but, you know, I have been doing, I mean, I sit down every day and I write. And before I write, I do a little meditation. Now, a lot of the time, it's incredibly shallow or not there or really doesn't go anywhere. I'm really not being mindful about it, or it's just me churning thoughts in my head, and it's really shammy a lot of the time. It really is. Sometimes, yeah, I'll spend 10, 15 minutes just sitting quietly and waiting, and maybe my mind will become a little more pacified, a little more open. But it's always been, the idea has always been that at some point in there, I get a little sense that I'm what I just call ready to write. And it's a tiny shift in the kind of input output dynamics of my brain. But recently, and I've gone through dozens and dozens of different rituals around this idea of meditation. Sometimes I'll do a little yoga. Sometimes I'll just sit there. Sometimes I'll lay on the floor. Sometimes I'll just stare at the wall quietly. Sometimes my eyes are open. I used to repeat dream, metaphor, want, love, poetry, wit. I used to meditate on that mantra: dream, metaphor, want, love, poetry, wit. Mm-hmm. And I had this whole theory about how they all blended into each other for the ultimate creation of genius. I many times, Iyo mono momo nome, Iyo mono momo nome. I thought about what those syllables mean to me. I've done all this shit. But recently, I've just sat there quietly until a thought occurs that I didn't seem to generate. And the minute that happens, I have this sense that that my sort of insight pipeline has opened up. Mm. And so I think the reason I told that is that meditation is going to take many forms. It's like doing TikTok. You should just try, try, try. And it's always going to be changing. And And you know, there's the same Zen master that we know in New York said to me that, I might have mentioned this on this podcast before, but you know, we have this idea of enlightenment. Oh, the monk is walking down the road and he trips over a can and suddenly he's enlightened, right? There's a gajillion stories like that. And if you sit long enough, you get enlightened. If you do enough yoga, you get enlightened, blah, blah, blah. He said, you know, the word enlightenment is just a translation of some word from whatever language you're talking in. And one of the ways you could translate that word is just insight. An insight. And an insight is just, you know, oh, right, that's true. Like, oh, that, right. Right? Mm-hmm. It's a moment of becoming aware of something. Mm-hmm. Just becoming aware. So the monk's walking down the road and he hits his foot on a can and he becomes enlightened. All he really has is an insight that if you hit your foot on a can, it hurts your toe. So you should look out for cans. That's it. That's enlightenment. But I think insight is something that liberalism is increasingly opposed to. Because insight ultimately involves breaking through. And when I say, when I have a thought that I didn't seem to generate, mm-hmm. I mean I have an insight. But that thought could be anything. Could be anything. And that is not good liberalism. Liberalism wants to control all the thoughts. And in a sense, a liberal can't have thoughts that they didn't generate until there start to become fissures or cracks in their liberalism and thoughts start coming in. Right. So,
sorry, can I ask something?
Yeah, go ahead. Quick?
So, when you say a thought that you didn't seem to generate, because I've talked about intrusive thoughts, like it. But I think of intrusive thoughts as like a repetition of like something, like a movie I've seen or something, like something that was generated somewhere else. But I don't feel like I generated it, but I did generate it. I assume you're talking about like real thoughts that are like actually insightful as opposed to like a repetition. Or how would you sort of categorize that kind of thought differently, or just
it's always in preparation for writing, and so I would say it's always a thought that I say, oh, I'd write that down.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Like it's a bit of wit. Mm-hmm. It's a quotable. Mm-hmm. Or it's at least some kind of.
When you're looking for new ways to say
new ideas, I was about to say. Some kind of new idea.
Repetitions or...
That's right.
Mantras.
Yeah, they're not just me running through anxieties or worries or concerns or thoughts or recounting posts I've seen or things I've heard said. It's like a new thought. It's an insight.
Yeah.
And the minute that insight occurs... then I can proceed, and then more insights occur and more things, and then 2 hours later, I'm tired. Mm-hmm. And I'd say...
It does seem like a meditative process for
you. And I would say for those whole 2 hours, I'm kind of live streaming my meditation.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you say you don't meditate, you make art all the time. So are you not meditating? I mean, it strikes me that, like, I understand that you sit at your computer and you're dealing with software and different images are coming up and you're grabbing files and you're generating things, and then you're maybe tweaking, and then you're maybe choosing between different generations. But the whole thing that you're doing, the mind that is engaged in those myriad choices, I mean, choices, you know, what's running that operation? And I would say that is meditation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's possible.
So I think it's important, you know, for you not to be like, I never meditate.
Yeah,
I think you actually meditate all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I don't. I mean, I guess that's what people call the flow state, perhaps. And I do feel like I get into that when I'm making art.
Yeah,
it becomes a bit of a flow, mm-hmm. but then I think. In this sort of what I've was thinking about as like a, let's say just sitting on my couch, looking out the door, trying to meditate thing in that kind of context. That's where I particularly feel like.
Yeah. I think you're kind of like you're fixated on the, you know, the do nothing,
mm-hmm.
think yeah. nothing.
Yeah.
Empty mind form of meditation,
mm-hmm.
which I get. Yeah, I mean, me too. I like that too. You know, do nothing, think nothing, empty mind. That's wonderful stuff. And how many times a week do you do that, and for how long?
Oh, I mean,
exactly. None. exactly. So, you know, if that's really important to you, then do it 20 minutes a day, every day for 5 years.
Yeah.
So don't say I don't meditate or I can't meditate or it never works.
Yeah.
Nah, like, you know, it's like TikTok again.
Yeah.
Post for 3 years. Then tell me it doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, I think that this is a really cool way to think about meditation in a way that it's a different, it feels to me like a different way to think about it.
What does?
This idea of the intimacy of the trembling that requires the visceral fissure. I mean, it's like,
refusal.
Yeah. It's a completely different approach, which,
you know, there's that whole thing of like, you know, the thought comes up and you knock it aside. The thought comes up and you push it away. The thought comes up, you knock it away. It's just no. It's a constant no.
Yeah.
That's how our Zen friend actually describes meditation. Yeah. Is it's just no. Push the thought away. Push the well. That's just called refusal.
Mm-hmm.
But now ask yourself, what are those thoughts?
Yeah.
What's it likely to be? What is likely to be the pith of those thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Those thoughts are just going to be liberal advertisements.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Liberal exhaust.
Yeah.
Liberal farts, liberal belches, liberal screams, liberal repetitions. You know, that's all it's going to be. Liberal reckonings, liberal recollections.
So in that context, I feel like I've been trying to do that for a long time and it hasn't, I mean, I haven't been able to.
Been trying to do what?
I haven't been able to just say no to that. They still get me sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes.
Okay, well, there you go. Not all the time.
Yeah.
nobody ever said you're going to like do it all the time.
Yeah.
That it's going to work all the time. But if you are committed to it and it's something you want to do and it's something that works sometimes, then already you're like, holy.
Yeah.
Already you're like way out there. You're engaging in the refusal. You're experiencing the trembling of bang. Like, huh? Geez, you're lucky it happened once.
Mm-hmm.
You need to appreciate the size of your enemy.
Yeah.
That you should ever have any victories against liberalism is astonishing.
Yeah.
Consider its size.
Yeah.
Consider its strength. Consider its forces. Its reserves. Consider its resources. You are a tiny nothingness compared to the liberal war machine.
Mm-hmm.
So relish your victories. Have them as often as you can. And you know, as you approach death, you'll say, I fought hard to be free. And I sought the refusal, and I sought the fissure, and I sought the trembling of being, and I sought the there of the temporal spatial playing field where I could experience the essence of truth. And I did it sometimes.
Yeah.
I really did. I really felt it. I mean, that's my experience right now. I would say, yeah, you know, you know, I'm kind of in this position, you know, it's like sometimes I think, well, when I'm done writing plays and I've written as many as I could, say I've written 40 or something, will I say to myself, you know what, you never actually really got it, did you, you fool? You know what I mean? You never really ever got it. And I will say that to myself. I say that to myself every day. But then I'll also say, yeah, but sometimes I did. Like, sometimes I did.
Yeah.
And for me, it's all, at this point, for some reason, it's all just descended into how free from the liberal mind machine can I be?
Yeah.
Because it's not out of vengeance or spite or just being political. It's actually, that is for me the definition of freedom. Like I now measure my years. I measure my mind. I measure my meditation success as a series of shallow to deep, failed to successful, uninsightful to insightful moments where I feel a little bit of opening, a little bit of breath, a little bit of clearing, like the smog of liberalism has cleared away from me and I have a little bit of insight.
Yeah.
Because you're everything you think has been thought for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that's it. Yeah. Is there something else? I know you want to say something like, but how do I do it?
No. Actually, that's not. I mean, I think the one little remaining thing is like, I guess the whole, like, I'm torn between taking that idea that the refusal of each liberal thought or refusal of each thought is a real approach to meditation, or that it's just a liberal approach to meditation, I guess, because it came to me. I at a time when I was very liberal, basically.
What came to you?
That kind of idea. I mean, it wasn't exactly that idea, but it is the idea that you watch a thought rise and you watch it fall. And you don't, I guess, engage in it. And so does that make sense what I'm trying to ask? Like, so is that just a liberal approach to meditation, or is that actually...
I mean, it's a great, 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 great question. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, let the thought arise and let it fall seems to be precedented on the idea that that is hard.
Yeah.
Why is that hard? Because you're a liberal.
Yes, exactly.
So sitting there and trying to have ideas rise and fall while being a liberal is really, you know, eating your own foot.
Yes.
So
I mean, it's literally an impossible
challenge. Right, it's impossible. Right? Exactly. Exactly. And so that's why, you know, that's in a sense why I think this book is the most important spiritual text ever written. Because it doesn't tell you how to meditate. I mean, it does. It's in there. But more importantly, it tells you the how to attain the disposition that will mean you are actually meditating. And that disposition is essentially how to exterminate liberalism from yourself so you can actually start to be free. That's what this book teaches. So
yeah, that's really well said. It's like the predisposition to be able to let a thought rise and fall.
Exactly. Exactly. So thought arise and fall, yeah, fuck that.
Yeah.
Right? Just refuse liberalism and understand what that means. And then ask yourself, okay, what do I want to do with my mind?
Mm-hmm.
How do I want to make my mind actually free? How do I actually want to have insight? How do I want to... And again, what are you trying to do when you're meditating? Just, what are you trying to do? Mm-hmm. What are you trying to... Like actually coming to your own personal decision, answer to that question, you know? Like, let the thought rise and fall. Oh, that's so what? Your meditation is just like enacting a liberal script?
Mm-hmm.
Is that called meditation? So, like, you don't even know what meditation is.
Mm-hmm.
You have to stop being liberal and then ask yourself, what is meditation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of why I recounted that story, is I think right now, and this will probably change in 3 weeks, but right now, to me, meditation is what I do with my mind as I approach and inevitably receive that insight that leads to a series of further insights.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it independent creativity. I call it writing. I call it opening. I call it saying truths. I call it being quotable. I call it, you know, a bit of wit.
Mm-hmm.
That's to me what meditation is. And every time I say something wonderful on paper, I feel like I'm being intimate with the gods.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it is real. It is meditation. It is real. It is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happening in the fissure from which liberalism has been expelled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, ideas that one can imagine thriving and being allowed in a liberal milieu very well may occur in that fissure, but they are not simple products of the liberal robot regurgitation system. They came about freely.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Good answer.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us for the Leaping Cholla podcast. For more information, visit leapingcholla.com and be sure and follow us on socials. Until next time.